Hello, everyone. Good afternoon. The House Transportation Committee meeting will come to order. The time is 1:03 on Thursday, February 20th. Present, we have Representative Clayman, Representative Story, Representative Tallarico, and myself, Chair Stutes. We do have a quorum to conduct business. As usual, I will remind everyone to please silence their cell phones. And we're asking that you do not approach the committee table, but if you have any thing you would like to pass to a committee member, feel free to either get a hold of Sarah Pearman, or we have Joe Greenow out in the sitting out there with you. Either one of them would be happy to assist you today. I'd like to thank Jamie Buehner, our committee secretary, and Amanda Kraft from the Juneau LIO for technical and teleconferencing support. We have one order of business today. We're going to hear House Bill 249 related to establishing the Marine Highway System Corporation. Introducing this bill is a conversation piece about the management of the Marine Highway System. I'd like to use this opportunity to gather community and stakeholder input. Today, we're just going to hear a high-level overview of the bill from my staff and then follow up with a presentation from representatives involved with the Alaska Marine Highway Reform Initiative. In the room, we have Robert Venables, Executive Director of Southeast Conference, and we also have Ms. Susan Bell of the McDowell Group. Thank you both for coming. We also have Deputy Commissioner Rob Carpenter, who is new to the job back there in the corner. Welcome, Rob. And of course, we all know our legislative liaison, Mike Lesman. Welcome, Mike. Happy to see you all here. Mike is from the Department of Transportation. It is my intention to hear the bill today and then hold it for further examination at a later date. And with that, I'd like to invite my staff, Sarah Pearman, to speak with the committee about House Bill 249. Ms. Pearman, if you would come, identify yourself for the record and give us a brief overview.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Sarah Pearman, and I'm the aide for the Transportation Committee, and I work for Representative Stutes. And I drop things occasionally. House Bill 249, establishing the Alaska Marine Highway System Corporation, is the product of decades of work from many Alaskans. Before I take you through the substance of the bill, I would like to quickly give you some background on that matter. The first Alaska State Legislature approved the Alaska Ferry Transportation Act in 1959, and the first ferry became operational in 1963. As early as 1984, Governor Sheffield's Alaska Marine Highway System Task Force established to assess Alaska Marine Highway System's structure and rates in the face of growing public demand and reduced operating budgets determined that the system was, quote, archaic, and that there was, quote, a definite lack of continuity of purpose. The task force suggested the consideration of a public authority or corporation.
Excuse me while I welcome Representative Gillis.
Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you.
Of course. Your packets include a 1989 memorandum from then DOT Commissioner Mark Hickey acknowledging that the system, quote, has suffered greatly due to its overall lack of continuity and top management since its inception. During the same era, we see a lack of new boats being added to the system. The Marine Highway System has several vessels built in the 60s and 70s, yet there is more than a two-decade span where no new vessels were built. Today, we are facing a reality where half of our ships are more than 40 years old and the repair costs are substantial. As you all know, 11 out of 12 of the vessels are currently in layup or overhaul for repairs. Since the 1980s, we have returned to the question, how do we better operate the Marine Highway System again and again? This spring, a Reshaping the Alaska Marine Highway System report prepared by Northern Economics that was commissioned by Governor Dunleavy determined that it isn't feasible to fully privatize marine ferry service. Beginning in 2016, Southeast Conference led the statewide Alaska Marine Highway System Reform Initiative with a steering committee of 12 members from around the state. The reform group worked with McDowell Group and Elliott Bay Design to study other ferry systems from around the world. After looking at several, notably the BC ferries and the Scottish Calmac ferries, the group determined that the public corporation model is a viable solution for the Alaska Marine Highway System. Public corporations aren't new to Alaska. We have the Alaska Railroad Corporation, Alaska Gasline Development Corporation, Alaska Housing Finance Corporation, to name a few, and the list goes on and on. The Alaska Marine Highway System Reform Initiative looked at at several of our existing models and made recommendations accordingly. This model before you today is largely based off the Alaska Railroad Corporation's model. With a 7-member governor-appointed board of directors, benefits of this model include infusing private sector expertise and generating consistent leadership with a longer-term planning power. The corporation model also internalizes labor negotiations, improving the ability to quickly react to any management labor disputes. Okay, so that's the 40,000-foot overview. If you'll bear with me for just a few more minutes, I'm going to get further into the nitty-gritty of the bill. This bill has 84 sections, including a full new chapter in Alaska Statute 42, Public Utilities and Carriers. And for that reason, a sectional analysis is forthcoming, but is not ready for you today. In the meantime, I'm just going to give you guys a quick brief nutshell of what this bill does. So House Bill 249 establishes the Alaska Marine Highway System Corporation and transfers the duties and responsibilities currently held by DOT relating to the Alaska Marine Highway System over to the corporation. Like I mentioned before, it puts in place a 7-member board of directors. In your bill, you will see that the board is made up of commissioners of DOT and Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development, as well as 5 members appointed by the governor. The appointed members serve on staggered 5-year terms. 4 of the 5 appointed members must have expertise in transportation, finance, and business operations, and the remaining members shall represent the general public. I just want to make a quick note that the intent from the reform group is that it's actually, we don't have 2 commissioners. We have just the commissioner of DOT, 5 members appointed by the governor, and 1 representative from labor. That is a drafting oversight that will get cleared up. And the corporation is tasked with managing the Alaska Marine Highway System and its assets in a safe and efficient manner. It must provide continuous transportation services to coastal communities and support the overall transportation needs of the state, while simultaneously providing public accountability. The board of directors is responsible for the legal and financial obligations of the corporation, which include overseeing labor contracts, leases, issuance of bonds, and other financial transactions. The board is also required to establish corporate objectives and secure sustainable funding, be it from earned income, legislative appropriation, or other revenue sources. The board shall also appoint an executive director to be responsible for the corporation's management. The corporation remains accountable via the Alaska Executive Branch Ethics Act and the Executive Budget Act. Executives of the corporation are required to conduct business to the highest moral and ethical standards, and the corporation is subject to the same budget processes used by the agencies. The corporation owns all of its assets, ensuring continued access to funding. Notably, as a public corporation, it still has access to federal transportation funds. The powers of the corporation include but are not limited to adopting regulations, issuing bonds, negotiating leases, and entering into loan agreements or contracts, and suing or being sued. With that, I'm going to wrap this up. I know we have 2 experts in the room who are looking forward to telling you more about this. I just want to leave you with 2 critical pieces of information that I've been remiss about talking about in more in depth. The stability aspect of this is a really big deal. A board of directors and a consistent CEO give this corporation significant stability compared to where we're at today. We only have to look as far as the fast ferries, the Chenega and the Fairweather, or the new Alaska class ferries, the Taslina and the Hubbard, to see, with their consistent changing designs, to see where instabilities due to changing political climates have left us. The other large piece of this is the labor relation management. Currently, personal services represents approximately 70% of the operating budget of the Marine Highway System. Significant savings are anticipated under this model through the development of new contracts. Currently, the general manager and deputy commissioners of DOA and DOT are responsible for overseeing labor relationships on top of their other job duties. Under this corporation model, that could be condensed under one labor relations model, such as the Alaska Railroad Corporation has, or possibly perceive other alternatives. Anyways, with that, Madam Chair, to the members of the committee, I will conclude my overview.
Thank you. Are there any questions for Ms. Pearman? Certainly. Representative Story.
Yes, and I guess there are questions for you yourself as the maker of the bill, and maybe there'll be some more comments about this. But I know that the idea is to keep it sort of have its own measure of oversight, and no matter who is in the administration, having 5 members appointed by the governor of the corporation. I'm wondering why that was picked. I think it would be more stakeholders from the different areas and maybe a couple positions from the governor. Just curious.
Sure. Well, I would, through the chair to Representative Story, I will take a quick stab at that, but I also would hold that. I will ask our representatives, Mrs. Susan Bell and Mr. Robert Venables, to maybe address that a little more as well. Partially, it's on a five-year basis that these appointees are put in, and it's staggered so that they will cross multiple administrations, potentially. It depends on if it's a governor who's elected for multiple terms or not. But with that, I think that, like several private sector operations, we want to make sure that the board has significant expertise, and it's really choosing who is the best for the job in business operations, in finance, in transportation, and you know, whether that is from the governor or elsewise, maybe that's a conversation that could be opened up. But I would love to encourage our speakers to talk more about that.
Thank you.
Is there any further questions? Seeing none, thank you, Ms. Pearman. And we appreciate that. And with that, we will ask Mr. Venables and Ms. Bell to provide us with a little more information about the reform initiative that we've heard about. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Robert Venables. I'm the executive director for Southeast Conference, which is the regional development organization for Southeast Alaska. Geographically, we span from Saxman and Ketchikan area, Metlakatla, on up to Yakutat. But we are involved with a number of statewide initiatives, both in energy and transportation. We're very pleased to be champions for the Marine Highway System. It is actually the cause that caused formation of Southeast Conference in 1958 to advocate for the formation of the Marine Highway System. So we've been very much aware of the demise that has been long coming. You know, this is not something that's surprise happened on Inauguration Day. It's been the perfect storm brewing, and it's hit us with, well, it's kind of the day we have outside there. It's ugly. In the midst of that, we've been working for about 4 years, as staff just told you, on a number of initiatives to try to figure out what is the best path forward. And so we're very pleased to present this overview today, and just kind of quickly walk through that, and happy to take questions throughout or at the end, however the committee chooses. But just kind of an overview of the system itself, and I know you see a lot of this as you go through the budgets and the presentations by DOT, so we won't belabor anything, but it is unique. There's a lot of people that have asked, well, surely there's a system that we can just copy someplace in the world.
And I'm going to, excuse me for just one moment, but I want to encourage our committee members, if you have questions as we go along, please feel free to ask them.
Thank you. So, and there's not a single system that is, you know, just analogous to anything in Alaska, but there are principles out there that we're able to glean from, and some of that is, that's really what brought this product forward, and we'll talk about today. One of the things that is really less known is how this began. And it's like, well, did it begin as a Southeast system, and it's only a Southeast issue, and just kind of, you know, mission creep across the world? No. In 1960, the Alaska voters across the state said marine transportation is a viable component of the transportation system of Alaska. And that's how Kodiak got their boat at the same time that Southeast Alaska got their first vessels. And so the voters have all along identified the marine transportation system as part of Alaska's transportation system. So I'd like to just kind of, you know, put that out there for the record and remind people that we're, you know, we are there and mindful of the place that the system plays in the overall intermodal system of highways, airports. But here we are today. We've seen that, you know, as we began this process, state funding was being cut. So it was about 30% over 5 years. It was gradual. It was assimilated. And then we saw the nearly 50% cut this past fiscal year's budget. And then the reshaping study that Northern Economics put out, it was using modeling that was another 50% cut. And you know, budget numbers aside, really the most concerning thing is that that report is a report of data and ideas. It's not really a long-range plan, which I think are aware the governor announced a working group yesterday that will attempt that, but here we are without that today. So, you know, it's no secret. We talked about that vote back in the 60s, and, you know, the fleet is, you know, right there. You've seen that perhaps it's a better depiction of the fleet and its age and when where it's at. And really, there's no other system in the Western world that has a fleet as aged as this. This is an issue that should have been addressed, you know, over 15 years ago to have a renewal and replacement system. But here we are, and we need to move forward in trying to understand and put the sideboards on who makes the decisions and where, as staff mentioned, so you don't end up with vessels that don't really fit and get replaced. So what we did is we started at PEG 1. You heard staff mention that there's a statewide steering committee that was formed. There's over 150 people that are subscribed to regular updates that we put out on a monthly basis during the project working schedule. And then there's countless more that follow on the website, which you'll see along here, which is amhsreform.com. But we thought, well, we should go back and just make sure that what is the mission? And not that a mission statement makes any enterprise successful, but any enterprise without a mission that it's mindful of often doesn't fulfill it. And so we addressed that, and we knew that we needed to have some sort of strategic operation and business plan. At least we couldn't, with the budget and time that we had, we couldn't put together that plan, but we put together an outline, and we'll walk through some of that today. We knew that legislation would have to take place in order to make these things a lasting solution. You know, you can do only so much through administrative orders. And, of course, we had House Bill 412, which the House Transportation Committee sponsored in 2018. And then today we have House Bill 249, which takes that the next step further. And so and we do have some interim measures that you'll hear about as well today. So in phase one, what we did is we started off with the people. We had a summit in Anchorage where we asked folks to come together just to talk about, you know, what are the issues, why are the issues. We had a case study on governance models across the world, really, you know, in depth in the United States, looked at Canada, looked at some European models, and then and pulled those present, you know, what is the mission, and took all that together. And made recommendations for where to go from there, which really was the public corporation model. And so the mission statement, and this is just a draft product that the committee came up with, was that the marine highway system should deliver safe, reliable, and sustainable marine transportation for its residents, visitors, and commercial customers. That's kind of the three-legged stool for the marine highway system. And so from there, we launched into more of the nuts and bolts of you know, what would an operating business strategy look like? And so, you know, we engaged what we consider to be the best consultants available, which was the McDowell Company and the Bennett McDowell Group and Elliott Bay Design Group, which has the technical expertise on that side. So this time I'm going to turn it over to Susan Bell to walk through those strategic points that embodied the second phase of work.
Thank you, Robert. Good afternoon, Madam Chair. Susan Bell. I'm the CEO of McDowell Group, and I reside here in Juneau. As Robert said, phase two involved a team of Elliott Bay Design Group. They led this, and we were fortunate because not only do they have a long history with Alaska's marine highway system, they've worked extensively really around the world, but in particular in Washington State. They're very familiar with BC Ferries and others. And so again, hearkening back to what Robert mentioned about phase one, which was sort of a launch pad, they were able to bring in that expertise and look at other ferry systems. And back to the question that Representative Story asked, in phase two, McDowell Group, recognizing that we understand Alaska well, we've worked with a lot of different public corporations, we dove deeply into the structure and benefits of the public corporation. And I'll talk about this overall, but I want to be sure that question was answered. So one approach was looking at, well, what are other ferries? Some are privately run, some are public-private partnerships, some are public corporations. There's no one model. And then looking here at how are Alaska's agencies, particularly public agencies, operated. We, a significant portion of phase two looked at that, and then as we made a recommendation on going forward, we try to draw from the best, recognizing the Marine Highway itself and Alaska is unique. So I hope that answered your question, but it was drawn from our respective expertise. So phase two was conducted in 2017. It was really the largest portion of this reform effort, and again, the team worked to our strengths. Elliott Bay Design Group really focused on operations. They developed an operational model. They and again they do ferry stuff. McDowell Group, Jim Calvin, our lead economist, worked with our team on revenue analysis, not only looking at Marine Highway's revenues and looking at the system in a number of different ways, by vessel, by route, by resident, by non-resident, just, again, brought information forth, working closely with Marine Highway staff as well and the steering committee, but to help look at this from a business-like perspective. We also looked at revenues in terms of what are ideas for non-operating revenue sources, and that's an aspect of that report that I think is still valid. It's all valid, but still, particularly in these times, to think what else with the assets that we have can we do to help support the system. McDowell Group also led the examination of the structure and benefits of the public corporation and the stakeholder engagement. So I can flip and drive. The next few slides, just to give you a flavor of some of the material that we've been sharing with the steering committee with Alaskans over the last few years. Some of this is drawing from different studies. But again, back to looking at the data in a new way, and for this, part of what we wanted to really tell the story is that the Marine Highway is carrying, again, this data is a few years old, but the Marine Highway at the time we examined it was carrying Alaska residents from 175 different communities. So the little dots in this map are illustrating that. And we pulled data a few different ways, but again, particularly for our Anchorage neighbors and Mount Sioux neighbors, we wanted to really call out a few things. So here's one of the tidbits: that Anchorage and Mount Sioux residents accounted for 20,000 bookings and 15% of the revenue from Alaskans. So again, it's an Alaskan system. The next slide is just a little snapshot, actually drawing from work that McDowell Group did for the Alaska Travel Industry Association and the Department of Commerce. We've long conducted the Alaska Visitor Statistics Program. So we also wanted to illustrate that for non-residents who are traveling on the system, they're traveling throughout our road system quite extensively. We have more data, but this highlights that the most frequently visited community is Anchorage. At 51% of those non-residents traveling on the Marine Highway are going to Anchorage. 36% go to Denali National Park. 25% of them get to Fairbanks, and you can see the other some of the other numbers. And again, we've got this in great gory detail, but we wanted to tell that story both ways. Amy touched on a little bit of this because. You know, but I just want to be sure that we give it a moment here. As we look at the public corporation, we felt like we were addressing some of the major issues and maintaining the benefits, and that is that as a public corporation, it maintains interdepartmental coordination. Being housed in Department of Transportation. We looked at it transportation, looked at it commerce. We know railroads and commerce. But what we really wanted to preserve is interdepartmental coordination in the system. We wanted to preserve the public purpose of that. And again, some of that comes to funding, maintaining that access to federal funding, but also maintaining the system in a way that's really serving Alaskans' commercial needs, medical needs, school needs, also addressing some of the limitations. Again, I think Amy set this up well. Frequent turnover in senior leadership, short-term planning horizons, and also the indirect labor negotiations, the public corporation, and some of the structure that as it's outlined in the bill in prior legislation addresses some of these limitations. And I certainly recognize, having served as Commissioner of Commerce, the tremendous value that Alaskans get from board members who are serving on our public boards. They may be paid a small stipend, their travel benefits, but they are giving far more than they're paid for. And incorporating that board expertise into an entity like the Alaska Marine Highway Having that structure and additional layer of public accountability as we're thinking about operating with business and like a business, but again, it's different. Aligning a labor and management interests and reducing labor costs strategically so that those decisions are made with labor are part of what we think are additional benefits to the corporation. As Amy pointed out, the recommendation from the reform effort was to take a page out of the Alaska Railroad, which is having one of the board seats dedicated to the representative employees. We tried to pick from the best and put together a recommendation that we thought would really work for the Marine Highway. I'll pick up the pace here. You've heard it from Northern Economics, from the reform effort, but public funds, we believe, in order to provide safe and reliable transportation, given our geography, our population, public funds are needed to operate the system. We also recommend that revenue and market analysis is needed to guide actions. Again, more business-like focus for operations going forward. And again, we saw as we were pulling information out in the 2017 phase two report, it was of great interest, and we think that kind of data is needed going forward. I'm going to just touch on these globally, not individually, but following the delivery of the phase two report, one of the things we did in the subsequent year was identify actions that could be taken while legislation was being considered, drafted, and so there was a set of interim measures. They were discussed with the reform committee, with legislators, with the public. Certainly the first one, stabilizing funding, recommending a standardization of fleet and terminal. Again, that idea of robust market and revenue analysis for making business decisions, labor relations, and board development. So working towards development of the corporation, communicating with employees. It can't be underscored the importance of something that, with this much change, both the budget and consideration of changing the structure, employee communications, exploration of new revenue sources, and communicating with the public. So again, there's more detail in memos that were discussed, but wanted you to know that since 2017, that's some of what the steering committee and the consultant team have been doing. The next couple of slides are actually from a report that McDowell Group did for the Marine Highway itself several years ago, but there was renewed interest in it, and this is from an economic impact study. At the time the study was done, the public funding and the system and the number of transactions were much bigger. But the big messages remain the same, which is it provides significant local employment and wages, purchases businesses from a wide variety of businesses in Alaska and throughout the state. You're moving visitors and residents around. It's key to several industries, not only the visitor industry, but seafood. And also having a sound transportation system is really critical to community viability and helping reduce cost of goods and services, cost of living in our communities, time-sensitive shipping. And then just from a personal level, as people are moving to our hub communities for medical, for shopping, for festivals, it's really significant. And the last point here is about affordable school-related travel. These are a few of the quotes from that report, and again, it was there was renewed interest in that. I'm going to turn the microphone back to Robert to wrap up our remarks.
Thank you, Robert Venables, Southeast Conference, for the record. And so, this is just a snapshot of really who the participants are. It's not just a Southeast Conference organizational effort. This is something that's been statewide. As I mentioned, there's over 150 people that we know of that we're tracking on our email list, and there's the website that gives the entire state residents access to the information, which has been accessed a number of times. But these are folks that helped to fund the effort. The state of Alaska participated in some of the earlier stages, but this has been something where our communities, our organizations, our businesses, tribes, we all realize that we have to have skin in the game and it's meaningful. And so this has been something that has been a statewide effort from the very, very beginning. And I think that, it's really timely to have House Bill 249 introduced today, of all times. It's very much a product of what the people have been working on, and many of you have been working on as well, but it's also in step with the governor's reshaping report that came out. It very clearly said that there are high hurdles, challenges, and it was not likely to privatize the system, but that one or more public corporations could be a viable model to pursue. And so this allows yourselves, fellow policymakers, an opportunity to go through. It's not a perfect writing, and there's a lot of policy decisions that you all need to embrace to decide some of the finer parts of that, including the board composition. But I think that the railroad went through the same questions. They had other state law and constitutional guidance to come up with their professional board. And I'd like to maybe just point out, it's not a new idea. One of the earlier studies, and I'm holding a study here from the Nickum and Spalding Associates, it's dated 1982, and just a couple quick references from that to bring out, because how did we get to where we're at today? And they really point to the genesis back in the early 70s and 80s when the professional marine architects, naval engineers, were replaced by appointees of the commissioner's office. Nothing disparaging on good people that want to serve, but the level of expertise was not always there. And that is what's, when you have $100 to $150 million enterprise, you need to have the guidance that is it from those sectors. And, it was during the Columbia's construction where the marine architects, naval engineers, they were making a number of recommendations that kept getting overruled by the political appointees, which it mentions time and time again how they were overruled for the selection of engines, selections of different parts. And in each of those cases, it led to extreme costs for the state of Alaska to have to pick up afterwards. And so the conclusion of this report to the commissioner was that I'll just read it here. It says, if the Alaska Marine Highway is to be operationally successful, it should be divorced from the Department of Transportation with its preoccupation with bridges, highways, airports, etc., and made a separate entity of itself. It's the further belief that it should be they call it a ferry commission. And I think that their recommendation was that their expertise, even at the Department of Transportation, their engineers were very focused on those land-based infrastructure needs, and that the maritime they talk about the appointments of the governor and their levels of expertise. I was looking for that quote, which I did not have on here, but anyway, it's not a new idea. Oh, there it is. That's why I have it highlighted right there. It's not a good management to expect bridge and highway engineers with their training to oversee marine operations and ship construction with their broad base of technical requirements. The results of the past few years have borne that fact out, and this was in the 70s. How much more so today, as we see? And I think that during this time where we see the old report saying, take a look at this. You've got the new report the governor's office released this past month saying you should look at this. I really thank the chair and the committee for introducing and holding a hearing on House Bill 249, and we're certainly available to answer any questions about how our effort over the last 4 years came to that same conclusion.
Well, we've only just begun, Mr. Venables, but thank you. Do we have questions from this committee? Representative Klayman.
I apologize for asking you for the refresher, but it seems like in the last legislature, not last year, but in the 30th legislature, there was a fairly detailed presentation that we heard in transportation about reforms. Was there actually a corporations bill that was introduced 2 years ago, or is this the first one we've seen in a while?
Through the chair, Representative Klayman, that you are very correct. This is a new rendition of that bill that has been that was reintroduced at that time. It was actually a House Transportation Committee sponsored bill that 512 was it 512 I believe.
Mm-hmm. I believe
that was very similar, but
no,
it never left.
Never went, never left.
412. Yeah, it was 412.
Sometimes I need my memory refreshed. Yeah.
Thank you. Me too. 412. Do we have other questions, Representative Story?
Yes, on page 4. I believe it is, or maybe it's like 8. I don't have my readers on, but it says you examined other case studies of other ferry systems. And I was just wondering if you could summarize a few of the other case studies that you looked at before you came to recommend this model.
Certainly, and we do have that case study on our website, and so I'll work with staff to make sure that comes to your attention directly. But we looked at the Washington State model, which has more of a point-to-point system, high volumes of traffic,
right.
And so that's what made it really different. The British Columbia model, which is interesting because I think it has some instruction for our consideration in that they actually have created a corporation itself, and the government provides a fee for service. And so on some routes, that is actually higher because there's more of a public service mission to perhaps an underserved community that is less economically able to provide its share of the fare box, and other routes are considered to have much higher fare box recovery. We looked at some on the East Coast, and there are a couple that are privately owned, but their unique circumstances with high traffic and very unique point-to-point makes that a completely different application than what we face here today. But again, I think there's that case study has seven examples on there, and we'll make sure you get a copy of that.
Do we have any further questions? I guess seeing none. I certainly do thank you for coming before us. And like I said, this is just the beginning of a long process. It's abundantly clear to me and to others that the ongoing maintenance and operational issues, with all of the ongoing maintenance and operational issues, that it's been very difficult for DOT to make long-term decisions regarding the Marine Highway system and its ridership. If that were not the case, we would not currently have 11 out of 12 of our ships inoperable. And House Bill 249 opens the door to conversation about the restructuring of the Alaska Marine Highway Management System and operations for the purpose of creating stability within the system. And I think that's what we all have to keep in mind. We're all going to have to give a little and get a little. And I'm really looking forward to working with the new committee that's been appointed and moving this forward. But in moving it forward, we have to remember that right now there are communities that are in a crisis situation, and we need to address that immediately, somehow, mm-hmm. some way. And I believe that that's up to us as the legislators and as Alaskans to see that there are Alaskans that are in need currently get a helping hand. So again, I look forward to this. I'm sure this will be one of many meetings that we have together. And I certainly do appreciate, once again, you taking your time and coming and walking us through this. And we look forward to going through the section. Well, we sort of look forward to going through the sectional at 82 sections. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a feat. But at any rate, thank you again. And again, I'm going to ask the committee one more time, any more comments or questions? Comment?
Brief comment.
Thank you, Madam. Representative Clayman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Looking back is always a more accurate vision than sometimes looking forward. And I suppose the three things that really have struck me as we've been looking at this in recent years, the first is when we look back at the decision to buy the fast ferries, it probably had a certain logic at the time, but we look back and you kind of say, well, what were we thinking? And even the more recent decision to bring in the Alaska-class ferries, which don't have the ability for crew to sleep on the boats, they don't load the way the other ferries load. And even though I think there was a certain logic to it, I think you still look back and say, kind of, what were we thinking? I look now in terms of current operations, and I really think the traffic from Bellingham in the summers, the fact that we're only running one boat a week and that we aren't trying to figure out ways to put as many boats as possible and fill them up all the time, because that's our biggest revenue resource, and that's actually one of the places the ferries, I think, have been able to run in a positive cash flow. We ought to be figuring out ways to bring more cash in on that. If this was an airline, if this was an air or Alaska Airlines, we'd be saying we should add another flight to that route because we can fill it up. And if you filled that flight up, you'd be filling it, adding yet more. And I guess my analogy, and it's going back to airplanes, but you look at the success of Southwest Airlines, and they never bought anything but 737s, and part of that was because they figured if everything's the same, then if you have to make changes or there's cancellations, it's easier to swap something in. I know they've had their share of problems with the MAX 8, probably more than others, because they're so dedicated to 737s and they have so many of them, but I still look at that and think one of the reasons to go to a corporate model is there's a much better likelihood of kind of internal operational consistency and a better likelihood that there'll be long-term plans that we can really show how moving forward into the future we'll have a clearer vision and won't just be looking back in retrospect and wondering what were we thinking. So I really appreciate this bill. I think I supported it previously. I look forward to the sectional analysis as best we can get through it. And I really support exactly what the chair is doing with this bill. Thank you for coming.
Thank you, Representative Clayman. Representative Story.
Yes, it's clear that we need a new start, as you commented, so to speak. People, we're ready for this. I think people are ready for something that takes into more stakeholder engagement and has the mechanism to do that. And so when it would be interesting to me, we'll talk more about how the corporation is formed and how we get more stakeholder besides the seats on the board. What is the plan to go out to communities more when you have the public corporation so we make sure that all voices are really heard in all regions? Because what's kind of exciting too is realizing the different needs that the ferry system has for different people. And then I'm also would be really curious to hear more at some point how the labor relations piece works together differently than the current system we have, and how that is would be visual, how that mechanism would work in this sort of structure. So I look forward to the conversations. And then I must emphasize too that we really do have a short-term need right now that we have community in crisis, as yours. One of your pages showed, and we have a lot of work to do to get things in a much better situation in the near term. So thank you for this. Thank you.
Other comments? Seeing none, again, I would like to thank you, and I'd like to thank our members from DOT for coming for questions. Even though they got off the hook slightly today, that will not, I'm sure, always be the case, but today you got lucky. And with seeing no other business on today's calendar, our next meeting will be in this room, room 124, at 1 p.m. on Tuesday, February 25th, and we will consider House Bill 253 relating to the sale, transfer, or disposal of ferries from Representative Price Tompkins. So with that, at 1:45, I will adjourn.